After a very public resignation from Terrace City Council Board, Jessica McCallum Miller asked herself if she was going to continue on with a broken spirit and stay quiet about the systemic racism and sexism she had experienced as a public figure, or speak out and share her story with the public. CSEK News spoke with McCallum Miller as she was picking Saskatoon berries in late July. She's hard to pin down for an interview, as she's been getting many requests. But also with the work she's doing to unpack the systemic racism and sexism she's experienced for too much of her life. She now wants to spend more time focusing on the power she holds as an Indigenous woman, and focusing on empowering young matriarchs in training to access their own power. She was recently awarded the Lieutenant Governor's Medal for Inclusion, Democracy, and Reconciliation from Coast Mountain College. This award is meaningful to her because it means, quote, Indigenous people have a seat at the table, and it means that we are heard when we have a seat at that table, end quote. Listen to my conversation with Jessica McCallum Miller about how this award has changed her approach or access to Indigenous advocacy and her work with a newly formed group in the North called Matriarchs in Training. Here's Jessica McCallum Miller now.
Amasa. This is Jessica McCallum Miller. I am an Indigenous artist and advocate. I am from the Fireweed Clan of the Gikxan Nation, and my family is from Anspayoch Kispiox.
This question might seem kind of vague, but could you tell me about your journey to becoming an Indigenous advocate?
Sure. I think that in life, we each have a path. We each have a purpose, and I'm really happy to have found mine. It was quite a long journey. Even, you know, throughout my short life, I've learned quite a lot. I've had quite the experience as one of the province's youngest political advocates who's spoken openly about progressive issues. I think that being in a political realm, but also being an Indigenous person, is very difficult because you've got both feet in two worlds. You're constantly rerooting yourself. And I think this year I finally realized what my purpose is and what my goals are for the future. I really find my spirit is just rooted in grassroots advocacy and the movement for Indigenous peoples. I think that it's been a very, very long time, generations, that as Indigenous peoples we've gone through so many atrocities, and it's really, really time for us to uplift our communities and heal. So yeah, I'm still on that journey.
Speaking of you as a political person as well, when you left the Terrace City Council, you cited racist and sexist behavior being displayed on that council board. And I have two questions for you. One, what did that experience teach you about speaking out? And two, have you witnessed or do you know of any change on the council since your public departure?
A lot of the issues are systemic. I don't know if anything has truly changed. I know that the regional district had reached out to the city and offered them some of that cultural awareness training that I really had tried to push for. So after I had left, that was offered. They did go through that training. I would hope that they have changed. I would hope. I think it taught me a lot about who I am as a person. For some time, it made me feel ashamed of my Indigenous identity, not being able to speak out on issues or not being supported about like my personal experiences and not being supported in that. My role, you know, representing so many different demographics that had never been represented before, it was really, really challenging. So I think I got to a point where I decided, you know, am I going to continue on like this with my spirit broken, not being able to be a strong Indigenous voice, or am I going to expose some of those challenging things were going on, and exposing the systemic racism. It's very, very prevalent within almost every, I would say, every single institution in our nation, because that's how that's the basis our nation was built upon, right? So I think it has taught me a lot about my own Indigenous identity and my own strengths. And I think it was the best and strongest thing I could have done was walk away.
Can you tell me about the Lieutenant Governor's Medal for Inclusion, Democracy and Reconciliation? Who nominated you for that?
That was Jill Stevens. Yeah, Jillian Stevens nominated me. She is the First Nations Access Coordinator at Coast Mountain College. Jill is an amazing person, and I can't thank her enough for nominating me. Her letter was very, very strong, that she wrote. Her letter of support, I had no idea actually that she had nominated me. She told me, and I was just, I cried so many happy tears. I was like, are you serious? And yeah, I was really happy to be able to speak at the convocation and have that recorded for the convocation. And really, really an honorable medal to receive.
And since receiving the award, do you think that your work towards Indigenous advocacy and reconciliation, do you think that your work has changed, or your approach to the work has changed, or your access with that work has changed at all?
I think it has opened quite a few doors, for sure, when it comes to access. My name has gotten out a little bit more since receiving the award. And I have been asked to speak at some public events. Recently spoke at a Gixan Reconciliatory Action event and met my family. You know, after 27 years, I never knew my Gixan relatives. And wow. So that was, you know, the biggest door that I opened was a way back home. By asserting my Indigenous identity and really looking after the cultural aspect, the spiritual aspect of who I am, and, you know, the land that I walk on, the people that I want to walk with, right, with everyone, I think it has really lifted me up, so I'm able to help other people too.
The Lytton and area fires, they burned over 11,000 hectares, with over 1,000 people having to leave their homes that were devastated by the raging wildfires around them.
Yeah.
And I read that you and Gladys Radek managed a supplies run for families devastated by the fire in Lytton this month. Could you tell me what that experience was like? And then as a follow-up, how can people help those who had to evacuate their homes with such short notice? What help and what resources would you guide them toward?
Okay. So it was really Gladys who had said, as soon as she heard about the Lytton fire and the devastation that the community had gone through, she said, you know, said to quite a few different community groups we have up here in the north, the Residential School Survivors Society, Kermode Friendship, our matriarchs in training, everyone, like community members, brought supplies, donations to Kermode Friendship Society. Everyone really came together within a few days, and we were able to bring some of those resources for the women and children, like formulas, diapers, some sanitary items for the females, some baby food, things like that. And I think that meant quite a lot to them. There's a lot of construction and one-way roads going through the canyon right now. And a lot of transport wasn't able to go in that way, especially during the fires. There were fires surrounding as we were headed in. It was the middle of the night, and we saw a raging fire in the pavilion. It was about 1 a.m, and it was so bright red. You could feel the heat, and it was, I would say it looked perilous. I was so glad that we made it safely. And when we got to the community of Lillooet, where everyone, where some of the evacuees had gone to, they were waiting at the recreation center, and they were so grateful. They did have food and regular things like that, but they had nothing for infants. Really. So they were very, very happy with that, as there were some young mothers, new mothers, that really had needed those items. So I think that when you're leaving an emergency situation like that, I'm just glad that they got out with their lives. There were community members that are lost, that are gone. I think a way to help people would be to really call on the NDP right now for their inaction. It took them 12 to 14 hours to respond. That community went up in flames within 23 minutes. People left without their pets, their shoes. They were carrying their children or their animals if they could. Some people didn't have vehicles to evacuate. It was really treacherous for everyone. And that's a large First Nations population in Lytton that was affected. And I do think that demographic had a role to play in that response time. So I think that people really need to find it in their hearts to think about that and write to the NDP government. I heard from locals when we got to Lillooet that they were very disappointed in the province because they had not had any communications at all, as there were fires still burning around Lillooet. They were on an alert, right? So they were thinking, well, what's our plan B? What's our plan C? But had no communication with the province. And the only thing they did hear was that the province had promised to build the CN railway tracks right away. That promise was apparently made before any promises of rebuilding the community. So it was very disappointing that industry needs and transportation needs were put at the forefront ahead of people's actual lives, just really getting back to a normal life. And any resources that people can bring, I know that there was a lumber company that donated wood for rebuilding. I think if people feel idle, try to help as much as you can. If you can help with the rebuild, a lot of this is going to be on the community, I can already tell. So if people can just show kindness in any way that they can, it's going to be really appreciated by the community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for that, and thank you for sharing that experience as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, I just have one last question, and that is, what's next for you, or is there anything that I didn't touch on that you think is important for our listeners to know?
What's next for me? I'm a part of a group called Matriarchs in Training. And so there's quite a few of us. We're building our little team. So we've got Arlene Roberts and Gladys Radek. We've got Bridget Watts, Nikki Aldangeli, Hillary Lightning, Erica Davis, and myself. And we're just a group of women who want to uplift the community, reclaim spaces, help people that, you know, we're all, as Indigenous peoples, we're all dealing with intergenerational traumas from residential schooling. So we're really we just want to promote grassroots initiatives going forward and help uplift our community around us. So yeah, if anyone wants to reach out to us, we've got a Facebook page and an Instagram called Matriarchs in Training. If there are any young Indigenous femmes that want to join, they are completely welcome to. We're open to any and all help that we can get.
Oh, that's excellent. Thank you so much. All right, Jessica, well, I really, really appreciate you giving me the time today because I know I interrupted your berry picking. So I'm going to let you get right back to that.
That's okay. It's great to talk to you, and I hope you have a great day.
Thanks, Jessica. Bye-bye.